From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know.
Welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We are joined with our super producer, Paul Mission Control Deccan. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. And that makes this stuff they don't want you to know. The course of true love, it's often said, never did run smooth. And this episode might not run incredibly smoothly either. We need to open, I think, with a disclaimer. This episode contains descriptions of sexual violence, descriptions of murder, homicide, suicide, and a boatload of language that reasonable people would find incredibly offensive. So if that is something that would be difficult for you to listen to, now is the time to turn back. Assuming you're still here, let's dive in. At some point in our lives, regardless of who we are in society or how we feel about ourselves, virtually every one of us has grappled with those heavy, tough questions of romance, of amorous feelings, of love, and of course, love's ugly cousin, heartbreak.
Yeah, and likely experienced rejection or a feeling of being some sort of outcast, at least for a time. People don't usually come out of the womb with complete and utter sexual confidence. Something you have to kind of work your way into. I mean,
other than Morrissey.
That's right. Well, Morrissey is a very special case.
It's true. I don't know if Morrissey was born or just sort of self-generated.
You know, Morrissey is notoriously asexual.
Yes.
Or celibate.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. A Volcel.
That's right.
You would say. And this unifying emotion, this unifying set of questions, it runs across the human species. There's pretty compelling evidence that other mammals, not just primates, experience what we would call love, heartbreak, grief, envy, jealousy, the whole cavalcade of related feelings. Today's episode explores an entire subculture dedicated, in some ways, to these questions. This group calls itself collectively incels, I-N-C-E-L. Here are the facts. Let's start with that. Let's start with that one word. What does incel mean?
It's just a portmanteau. It's two words, involuntary and celibate. And the gist basically is it's people who identify themselves as this, incels. They believe they're the victims of some oppressive society, the one in which we all exist, but they view it as much more oppressive than perhaps the average person would. And in this society, women, through their purported control of sex and relationships and sexual relationships, they're able to control almost every single aspect of life. And the person who identifies as an incel is the victim.
Yeah, yeah. The incel movement has a lot of different variations, but that's the key. They've constructed this theory of attractiveness, and we'll explore more of that in a moment. I believe the best way to succinctly describe it is a type of absolutist sexual caste system.
Yeah, and they've also constructed this worldview where sex is an inalienable human right. And a big part of the language in the incel community, at least among most members, is the notion that they are entitled in some way to sex as heterosexual males. And as we'll discuss, very much is a heterosexual community. I shy away from using the term movement, honestly. It gives me the creeps. I think of it more as a community. I don't know. We'll discuss it for sure.
I would typically say a community, although many individuals in this worldview do see it as a movement. The difference between a community and a movement is in the word, right? A movement is oriented toward a specific set of goals that can be measured as success or failure.
And this community inherently kind of lacks goals. In fact, it's largely about furthering these negative feelings. If you can say there's a goal, it's to feel as horrible about yourself as you possibly can.
There are some contradictory goals for sure. I don't know that everyone agrees within that community, certainly not outside of it. But I don't want to lose that point. The idea that sex is a human right, that only a certain type of person is indeed a person, and that desiring sexual contact while not experiencing it, at least in the way one desires, is both deeply traumatic and a great historical crime of our age. So out of all the horrible things human beings have ever done, not getting laid, to be crass about it, is somewhere at the top. Forget about genocide and mass starvation. And we want to be very clear. Noel, you raise an excellent point here. In this worldview, there is no room for same-sex relationships, the trans community, LGBTQIA, and so on. In this reality, there is only a black and white, again, absolutist reckoning in which men and women are the only players. And we've read the three of us have gone far, far, far down this rabbit hole. I've read some stuff about same-sex relationships from this perspective, and a lot of the people who are against it believe that – get this. I don't know if you guys saw this – believe that people who feel that they are gay or attracted to members of the same sex are just deluded because of the evils of feminism and that they have been bamboozled, for lack of a better word, because they have never met a quote-unquote real member of the other gender. Very strange, very strange. And like many insular groups, like cults or militaries or religions, the incel community both isolates and identifies its members through the use of acquired terminology or jargon, right? We have phrases like normie. For most of us listening, and for us here in the studio, that term is us. We're either normies or chads.
Well, also the normie's one that has meaning outside of this community. I mean, it's certainly kind of an internet term for squares, I guess, you know? Mm-hmm. But then within the incel community, it's its own thing. Mm-hmm. And some of the terms they use are very much exclusive to the incel community. And then some like that, they kind of co-opt and give their own little spin to, right?
Right, right. So a Stacey or a Chad is an attractive, popular person who has, in their view, the majority of sex on earth. Which, I mean, that's literally what it is. And there are other variations of this that we can explore. There are more examples. The term woman is very, very, very rarely used.
That's right.
It's either femoid, or female at the best.
Femoid, though, is kind of the one they really lean on. To me, that's just this inherently othering name for women. It sounds like some kind of callous, unfeeling robot. Like, think like the fembots from the Austin Powers movie. Mm-hmm. Also akin to like some kind of natural resource that has to be harvested and used rather than, you know, like a thinking, feeling human person.
Yeah. It goes back to the word humanoid, right? That resembling a human.
Exactly.
So There are other things like beta bucksing, mogging. Mogging I enjoy. Mogging is essentially when someone feels that some other, I guess maybe a competitive, it's a competitive thing. So for instance, if Paul, Mission Control, Deca, and don't worry, Paul, I'm not using you as an incel example. I know you'd never forgive me. I can see Matt's reaction to your face right now. So let's say Paul is in like a singles party, mingling, dating or something, and then some incel person wants to talk about a book, or a book becomes part of the conversation, and Paul has read the book. If the person is insecure enough, they will feel that Paul has somehow mogged them or one-upped them or made them seem like they have less value by having read that book as well. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's really mogging, like beauty or pornography is in the eye of the beholder.
Interesting. There's also an inherently, we'll get more into this later as we start to talk about some physical qualities, but there's an inherently problematic kind of racist language as well in the incel community. So you can be an incel of color, but if that is what you are, then they almost exclusively blame your lack of success on women or attribute it to the race. And these are some very offensive terms. And a lot of this comes from a fantastic video on YouTube called from a channel called ContraPoints. And there's a video on incels in that I cannot recommend highly enough. But terms like rice cell or black cell or curry cell to refer to people of other races. So it's almost like they're making that the focal point of their deficiency rather than some of the other details that we're going to get into.
Right. And there's an important point here because oftentimes those words are self-applied, which
that's also true.
Which would be startling, I think, to a lot of people from the outside because they are very racist.
Yes, this is a very self-loathing centered community.
And so there are categories that incels divide themselves into, the racial category being one. It's also – they'll also base their description on what they see as their sex life or what they see as the physical or mental or social defect that's keeping them from attracting women or, as they would say, obtaining sex. These are things like brain cells, near cells. People who feel like they do have sexual contact, but that it's so sparse that they're almost incels or they're almost red pilling, which comes up in just a second. Marcells, people who are married, but in a sexless marriage.
Or even something as specific as having a weak wrist. They call it the wrist cells or being too short or too tall, height cells.
Yeah. And as I was reading this list, I kept thinking, you know, what do you call the person who's gone the longest amount of time? Are they a Duracell? I do not step down from that joke.
You don't need to.
I will die on this hill. But, I mean, that's a little bit of levity. And to be honest, I didn't see anything with Duracell. But let's talk about pills. So cells are big, and so are pills. The concepts espoused first in The Matrix, which was made by people who would be found objectionable by this community, right? Where are the Wachowski
brothers? The Wachowski brothers. Wachowski brothers. Who went on to both transition.
Yeah, exactly.
To being trans.
I didn't realize they both transitioned. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're like twins, I believe, and they clearly shared the same experience in terms of their sexuality.
Mm-hmm. And their identity. So we all remember in The Matrix, I'm assuming, okay, if you haven't seen The Matrix yet, spoilers.
I rewatched it actually over the weekend with my kid.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Okay. It didn't quite hold up for me, and I think the reason is this, because it's been parodied and ripped off so much that it almost looks like a parody of itself at this point, at no fault of its own.
Sure.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I can see where you're coming from. The idea here goes back to a scene in The Matrix wherein Morpheus, yes. Right? Wherein Morpheus offers the protagonist, Neo, a choice. He can take a blue pill and he'll just forget the weird stuff that happened leading up to that moment and live out his life. Or he can take the red pill and have his eyes opened, encounter a revelation to see the world as it truly is. In the universe of inceldom, the term red pill describes someone who, like Neo in The Matrix, takes that red pill, experiences a revelation, and now recognizes the quote-unquote true nature of human society, accepting this absolutist black and white view and primarily subscribing to the belief that society discriminates not against women, but against men, specifically against you. You know what I mean? It's very bleak.
Yeah.
Very bleak worldview. And red pilling is just the act of spreading this worldview, of convincing other people, of proselytizing for inceldom.
And this applies to alt-right thinking and neo-Nazism. The idea of being red-pilled is when you have a mentor of some kind or someone who welcomes you into this world and this way of thinking, and it takes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well said. This also occurs with how have they rebranded race-based supremacy arguments? Oh, race realism. Did you guys run into that one? That's the thing people are saying with a straight face. And then there's Black Pill.
Yeah. So if Red Pill is a societal, like, worldview change kind of thing, Black Pill is a little even more metaphysical. It's going deeper even than the Red Pill. It's this fatalistic version of the world in which people who believe it inside the incel community, they subscribe to this biological determinism where your body was basically, as you were born, it was determined even before you were born that you were going to be an incel because of these traits that you have, either at your height or your wrists or your forehead shape or
the shape of your skull.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, these factors are going to make you unattractive.
That's right.
And then the same thing applies to people who are attractive and just you cannot change your inceldom and you cannot change the chaddom or whatever other version of humanity that exists out there.
Yeah, and the black pill is really just everything that comes along with going full bore into this very nihilistic worldview and everything that comes along with it. And Natalie Wynn, aka ContraPoints on the YouTube channel I was talking about, kind of breaks it down in a really interesting way, describes the black pill as the self-defeating worldview with no hope of happiness and sexual gratification. The sexual market value is genetic, completely unchangeable. This idea that you will be a virgin forever, that you'll never be able to have sex, therefore you will never be able to have happiness. And you should just LDAR or lay down and rot.
Mm-hmm.
That's a term.
Again, like many I don't want to call it a cult, but like many cults or movements that mess with your mind, there's this preponderance of very specific terminology and acronyms. Scientology uses a ton of acronyms for a reason. It works when you want to make people do and think as you would have them do and think. If neither the red pill nor the black pill suits you, then congratulations, sheeple. Along with me personally, are a blue pill. That means that you, like most of the world, don't accept this belief and incels will consider you cartoonishly deluded.
Yep.
So how did they get here? Let's look at the timeline. It's fascinating because we mentioned the ContraPoints video is a great exploration of this community. The Matrix is founding mythology. Both by trans people, right, or who have now transitioned.
Yes, the ContraPoints channel, it's a trans woman who does this channel and incredibly intelligent and funny and wonderfully produced.
And to the great shame of the incel community, or this is the first stuff they don't want you to know, this movement was originally the brainchild of, believe it or not, a woman. In the 1990s, a bisexual college student known only by her first name, Alana, was living in Toronto, Canada, and started a website called Alana's Involuntary Celibacy Project for those who, like her, were struggling to form loving relationships or felt maybe they were late bloomers, you know? And she described the site originally as a friendly place, a website where she posted articles, she ran a mailing list, people just talked about their personal experiences, to quote the country song, looking for love in all the wrong places.
Yeah, and just a general feeling of loneliness.
And it was a forum for men and women to talk about that.
And much more of a support community as opposed to what we'll see that it kind of twisted and mutated into.
Metastasized would be a good word, right? So we have quotes from Alana. She says, there was probably a bit of anger and some men were a bit clueless about how women are unique individual humans. But in general, it was a supportive place. And this is from an interview that the BBC did with her a while back. How supportive was it? Get this. One couple who met on this site ended up getting married and lived happily ever after. So this was not an incredibly toxic or negative place.
And the fascinating thing about the incel community, and as we see it even in its earliest roots, the growth of it is very intertwined with digital communication. And over the past few years, numerous online forums have become home to incel philosophy.
Yeah, yeah. Originally, Alana had created the word invacel. INVCEL. Someone suggested incel was easier to say, and then also it's homophonic with imbecile, right? So to Alana, the word incel used to mean anybody of any gender who was, as you said, Matt, just lonely but never had had sex or who hadn't had a relationship in a long time. And she says now we can't call it that anymore. The word has been appropriated. By 2000, she began to move away with the community and she thought, you know, my work here is done. This is blossoming. This is growing. This is a good thing. The digital world, the spontaneous communication, this low cost of information is allowing people to meet and support one another. But as the group grew, it became something fundamentally different. It encountered what psychologists would call the extremity principle or group polarization.
And we'll get to that right after a quick word from our sponsor.
And we have returned. Matt, have you ever been in a situation where, let's say there's something that you kind of like maybe a band or a, I don't know, ice cream, and you've met a group of other people who also kind of like it?
Yeah, I remember Ice Cream Club.
Oh, yeah. I remember Ice Cream Club. That was great.
And then you walk away. Studies show that if you talk to people who feel the same way you do, even about something relatively benign, even if your feelings aren't particularly strong one way or the other, if you already have that initial tendency or baseline opinion and you talk with people who have similar beliefs, afterwards, you will tend to have your belief in that thing more extreme. So you might walk into some conversation saying, oh, are you guys talking about Ben and Jerry's chocolate peanut butter fudge striped toffee explosion? I made that up. Mm. And they might be like, oh, yeah, it's pretty good. And like, oh, what do you like about it? And as you start talking about it.
Oh, well, yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't think about that aspect. Yeah.
And then you walk back and you're like, you know what? That's my favorite ice cream flavor.
Not only is it my favorite, it's the possibly the best ever.
Yeah.
That there ever was, that ever existed under the sun.
And other people just don't get it, you know?
No.
That is an example of group polarization, the extremity principle. Psychology shows us that people who hold similar beliefs tend to congregate. And as people with similar beliefs speak with one another, these beliefs tend to become more extreme. So,
So this is what happens with people who like fish. The band.
Yes. Shout out to our producer, Josh. Yes, this happens with bands.
I'm totally kidding. I think fish is great.
Fish is fine, but I don't see what the fish people see in it, you know? And I think part of that is possibly the community and the communal nature of going to a fish show and being around your quote-unquote people, and you know, and then if you took all that away and just listened to their albums, I don't think it would be the same experience if you're doing it in isolation, right?
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, to be fair, we're all pretty well outside the fishbowl. I mean,
they're fine.
Have any of us even been to a fish show?
No, I've had fish food ice cream by Ben and Jerry's, though.
Nice. Which is great.
Quite
it's a
good.
Great flavor.
The little fudge fish are awesome. Mm-hmm.
The closest for me is DMB, the Dave Matthews Band. I had that happen with me.
Whoa.
You got red-pilled?
You got acronymed?
I did.
Holy crap.
Oh,
dude.
Wow.
Yeah, and I hated Nirvana because of my insular DMB group.
Matt, have you been rehabbed though? Are you still a Daveite?
I'm better now. I still like Dave Matthews.
You can like both.
Yeah, exactly.
That's quality songwriting.
Smart.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Also, I said some.
That's fair.
but these are innocuous examples, right? Studies show that after these conversations happen, both you listening and the people you've spoken with will walk away agreeing more, essentially. Your opinion will be, as the Simpsons would say, embiggened. This holds true for opinions about sports teams, ice cream, bands like fish, other snacks, films, philosophical beliefs. This also, here's where it's weird, this also holds true for stuff we don't like. Let's say that you think Police Academy 4 is the weakest film in the entire franchise.
Who would ever think that?
I don't know, man. I wanted a harrowing example. And you interact with people who share that belief. After this conversation, you will likely think even less of what is arguably one of the most breathtaking cinematic achievements in this our modern age.
I'm tearing up just thinking about it.
Me too, man.
It's like mob mentality where you have a bunch of people that are maybe a little bit racist, and then you start getting them talking to each other, and they manufacture like this problem that doesn't even exist in nearly the magnitude they think it does. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, there's devils everywhere, and you got to kill them.
Yeah.
You just got to kill them.
They go from they'll create new problems that don't exist. I love that you said that. They go from, you know, well, I think – this stereotype about the Germans, or I tend to think the French are somewhat arrogant. And then, you know, a few weeks later, after joining the right Facebook groups, they're like, hang the Welsh.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, and this kind, you're talking about a drift towards extremism, really,
yes,
right?
Yes.
And it doesn't just happen in these little things. It happens in the big things, in the big communities, in religious communities.
It happens quickly.
In especially political now. Communities. Mm-hmm. Especially on Facebook.
And it's exacerbated and accelerated by this social media bubble that people just live in. And that is what the incel community is, if nothing else. It is a bubble.
Yes.
You know, it's like when you only watch Fox News or you only watch CNBC, MSNBC or whatever, and you choose to curate your experiences and blot out any outside experiences, you're going to become a more extreme version of that thing. It's just going to happen.
And digital platforms play a huge role in this. There's no question that Twitter played a huge role in the radicalization of people who later went on to join Islamic insurgencies. There's no question that Facebook and Russia played a huge role in making people in the U.S. Drift toward more extreme beliefs, not just political stuff. Anyway, again, there's a book called Foundations of Geopolitics. It's the playbook for what's happening. Read it. It has nothing to do with this episode. It's a weird plug. Weird flex, but okay.
Good book.
I like it.
But
weird flex, good book.
Yes, they're just so. So we see this. We did a video earlier, I think, years back on radicalization in ISIS. But this stuff still plays a huge role. Just because you're not seeing a video of someone getting beheaded doesn't mean this isn't dangerous when it happens in other places, other communities, other bubbles. So what does the incel community believe now? Let's look at their modern beliefs. First off, shout out to our How Stuff Works DNA. How do humans work? Incels are very adamant about this.
Yeah. You know all that stuff that you grew up around?
Uh-huh.
No.
Oh, yeah.
There's a soulmate for you.
Of course there is.
Somebody out there waiting.
Just for me.
Your equal.
Yeah.
Yeah. You remember that whole thing like there are all these fish in the sea. There are enough fish for everyone, I guess.
I like fish.
And there is someone for you. Well, that is some bull crap, buddy.
What?
Malarkey. Poppycock.
Well, that's not very nice. Tell me more.
Well, attractiveness. Mm-hmm. You know that thing when somebody is like, hey, I like you.
You like the cut of your jib. I'm digging this vibe.
Yeah, that's not an individual per person real thing. There's no individuality involved. It's just a clear-cut set of measurements that are just in a couple of factors, and they are exhibited in a couple of things.
This sounds very familiar.
Yeah.
Vaguely eugenic in nature. But let's go on. Let's test these waters.
Phrenological.
Speaking of genetics, let's talk about your height, your bone structure, your wrist size, your skin color, your forehead size.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that, because that right there is the heart of what makes you attractive. There are some socially accrued things that can get you an attractive or can create a Chadness within you.
An aura.
Yeah. Most of that is money, just money, wealth. And but there are a couple other things, power, influence, prominence, being a celebrity in general that can cause you to have Chaddom even as a founder of Facebook.
Like Bill Gates, for instance.
Correct.
Would be an example.
There are other factors. Let's see. Just a few. Personal initiative, if you work out a lot, if you eat a healthy diet, if you dressed well, making some of these things, like if you actually make a self-improvement in one of these areas, it can be called maxing.
Yeah, but that's the thing, though. In this community, that term is inherently kind of a neg, right? It's sort of like, oh, you how cute. You're trying to lift yourself up out of your pathetic squalor.
You're trying to dress max or looks max, but your wrist will still be small.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah, that's one of the inherently, I think, contradictory things. There's also similar to it's distant relation, the world of PUAs or pickup artists, there's this inherent belief that everything is programmatic and that if one does action A, action B, or result B rather, will inevitably and immediately follow.
That's right. Super producer Paul was telling me off air about a show on Netflix he's watching, I believe, called You, yep. where one of the characters is somewhat of an incel type and actually does pick up, get a girl, but it's exclusively using these kind of manipulative pickup artist techniques, and the inner monologue the whole time is sort of like expressing disbelief or, you know, sort of like, wow, it's really working kind of, you know?
Yeah.
But it's very much a bit of a Mark Kahn kind of situation almost, right?
Have you seen that? Have you guys seen that yet?
I have not.
Mm-mm. Okay. Well, I don't want to ruin it for anyone. It's worth watching. It is very Lifetime-ish, actually. It's like Lifetime After Dark kind of thing. But I'd be very interested to hear what you guys think after concluding it. The word I would use is problematic.
Fair enough.
And I think it's a great comparison you're making. So one of the great debates, just like you said, one of the great debates in the incel community revolves around this to do or not to do question about whether one should attempt to max in one way or another, right? Get a better job, dress better, maybe join a club like Toastmasters where you learn to speak to other people, or instead to rebel against this society and attempt somehow to fundamentally change, or in this view, correct the status quo. This leads to something called the Beta Uprising or the Incel Rebellion, which we promise we'll get to. That's just a seed. We're just planting that acorn to grow into a really shitty oak as this episode continues.
Okay, Beta Uprising.
Beta Uprising.
We got it.
And what goes along with this too is in the same way that maybe someone who's having depression would not take kindly to you just saying, ah, come on, just get over it. Just get out of bed. You'll be fine. You know, oh, you got anxiety? Go exercise. You know, in the ContraPoints video, she, I believe, coins the term, I don't think this is in the community, Chad-splaining. most incels are not receptive to being told to just get their shit together and try and improve themselves. And that idea of maxing is looked at often with scorn and as some form of fakery or as being not true to your incel roots, which they all still despise and think that they are less than. Right? So it's very counterintuitive, the whole thing.
Yeah, there's doublethink. And there's also – and this is something that you pointed out from the ContraPoints video. There's also this idea of catastrophizing. Could you tell us a little bit more about what that is?
Yeah, it's something that I think we can all relate to on some level at some point in our lives, but it's just this kind of cyclical negative thinking with anxiety and depression thrown in there. PsychCentral.com describes it as an irrational thought a lot of us have in believing that something is far worse than it actually is. And it can take two different forms, making a catastrophe out of a current situation and imagining making a catastrophe out of a future situation. Mm-hmm. So it's one of these things where the extreme transition from problem to we're all going to die, everything is hopeless and pointless, is a real stretch. Mm-hmm. Whereas the steps between the individual spots on that spectrum maybe aren't as much. But when you finally get to the end result where your mind goes, you realize this is very irrational.
Like the slow boiling of frogs.
That's right.
I would say that I am highly guilty of catastrophizing about my own life.
Yeah, no, I think it's something most people have experienced on some level or another. I have been as well and have had to work at it to not do that. But it's inherently part of this whole black pill worldview is that we will never find happiness, we'll never find love or sex or kindness of any kind. We'll always be treated as these outsider pariahs and therefore are doomed to a life of isolation and misery.
What's that line, Matt, from The Invisibles? Everything is true, nothing is permitted, right?
Oh, yeah. I think that is it. I don't know if it's verbatim, but it sounds right.
Yeah, there's a thematic similarity. So we've got the world painted, more or less, right? We've got the gist, the bare bones of this. Let's explore the most important aspect, I guess, in the incel community, or at least philosophically, women and men. According to incel belief, humanity works on this adapted version of the Pareto principle, the 80-20 principle it's called. And this means that around 20% of the dudes in existence, if that, get or obtain at least 80% of the women. Yep, get or obtain. Women are thought to be both intellectually and morally inferior in this worldview. Hypergamous, meaning that they sleep around a lot from their teens to around age 30. And there is also some very creepy stuff about underage people in the incel community. But at the same time, this doublethink occurs because despite the fact that women are supposed to be markedly inferior, they are at the same time enormously powerful due to, as you said, Matt, their perceived control over sexual relationships. And this is so similar to other discriminatory worldviews. A racist, for example, will also argue in terms of doublethink. Probably the most prominent and disturbing example from World War II was that the Nazi Party and people who held Nazi beliefs thought that Jewish people were inherently, irredeemably inferior, yet literally in charge of the planet. So how do you hold these two ideas in your head? In any group like this, the target of discrimination must be portrayed as fundamentally less than, but also for some enormous reason, incredibly powerful. Women, therefore, function, according to the incels, best as objects. And, you know, we're not going to do some song and dance and pretend like the world is not riddled with misogyny. This did not come out of whole cloth. You know what I mean? This came from somewhere. So that's how they think of women. Objects that are somehow inferior, but also all powerful and in charge of everything.
Yeah. But then what about the dudes?
What about the dudes?
Well, there are several types of male, and it's all based on really a misunderstanding of mammal hierarchy and studies that have come out a while ago about this kind of thing. And it's phrases you've heard before, alphas and betas. Really, those are the two primary ones. But then there's a third called the omega, which sounds awesome.
Yeah.
But let's continue.
All right.
So an alpha is essentially a Chad. It's a high-status male who gets all the sex he wants. Just whenever he feels like it, he just kind of points, and that's it. Alternately, an alpha may refer to a male's tall and muscular body type. Like if you look at someone and say, that guy looks like an alpha, that's what you're talking about. You have a muscular dude, right?
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, that's it. The thought is that this alpha is just irresistibly attractive to all females, not just Stacy's, who, as we kind of mentioned before, but also Becky's, which I don't even know if we mentioned a Becky.
Yeah, Becky's are just more average-looking, possibly a little nerdy females.
Sort of a female equivalent of a beta.
Yeah, exactly.
Ah, a beta. So, yes, in this case, both alpha and beta females, I guess, find the alpha male irresistible. And these guys sit at the absolute top of the human sexual food chain.
Right, right. And there's a very bitter comparison drawn here to the dark triad and the idea of being a bad boy, you know. In this view or from this perspective, an alpha is different from a bad boy due to their restraint. So unlike, for instance, Christian Bale in American Psycho, these guys are able to not instantly, immediately sexually assault and murder everyone, but that makes them even more desirable. This is a very, very strange, circuitous logic path there.
And then we talked about, I know we mentioned the Stacys, but Stacys are kind of classified as being sexually promiscuous, live the life of luxury, never have to work, instantly arousing bodies with large breasts, curves that are attractive to Chads, right? Mm-hmm. And this also is a sign that they are fertile.
Right. And this is a very ageist community, so the life of a Stacy is limited and stops at age 30, according to most incels. Then we've got the beta, right? The guy. The beta guy is not that great in relationships. Again, they use the word females, which is It's funny. Our colleague, Lauren Vogelbaum, pointed this out to me years ago, and it still haunts me. Whenever people say female, I can't not picture a Ferengi.
Really?
Female. Yeah. You'll have to ask her about it.
Yeah, because it's such a clinical way of looking at a human to categorize, mm-hmm. like, has anyone ever called you a male? That's a weird – that would seem very strange, and yet the some people say female in conversation, and it's you don't bat an eye as much. You
yeah.
know? But it still is inherently kind of clinical and strange.
I think most times when guys get called male, it's either in a doctor's office or when there's an APB out, you know, male suspect.
Oh, yeah.
So the beta, for some reason, for one factor or another, is not confident enough or competent enough to be an alpha, maybe because he doesn't buy into bad boy behavior, maybe because of his something unchangeable about his physical appearance or his social position. And they are often portrayed as the settled down types. So Inseldom would believe that once a woman has hit what they call the wall around age 30, they seek a beta male to financially support them, typically through marriage, while they still pursue alphas on the side. And then if they really want to paint an urban legend horror story of it, the beta male ends up taking care of someone else's child while the former Stacy, or whatever you want to call it, whatever you want to call this person, while they go off to pursue their adventures. And that's a terrible life, but still, they argue, it is better than the worst of the worst.
Yeah, the Omega. That is the guys with absolutely zero chance of ever having sexual intercourse.
So far as they believe, right?
Yeah.
So this is kind of the lowest. These are the people who end up advocating some of the more insane or fringe beliefs, at least people who perceive themselves this way. And we talked about the way that women are divided, right? Stacy's, Becky's, normies. Do we mention the term roasty?
No.
Okay. And then there is
– Feel free to Urban Dictionary that one yourself.
Yeah.
Would say watch the video Noel has mentioned multiple times here, yeah. and you'll learn about it.
Mm-hmm. So there's also this – I think I mentioned earlier, and this is very ageist, but if anyone were to ask me, hey, Ben, what is the peak desirable age – to an incel, what's the peak desirable age for a mate? Then I would say it's gross because often people will advocate being attracted to very, very young teenagers. And these are guys in their 30s and 40s.
We
just have to mention that. Now, this is just scratching the surface, but we have to look at now we've got this philosophy, right? We understand the universe. We understand the crucial or pivotal relationship, the debates around it. But how does this long-winded background on philosophy work out in the real world? To answer that, we have to look at modern actions. First off, these communities are being banned online left and right.
Well, yeah, and for good reason, right? I mean, not only are they violating rules of whatever subreddit or whatever message board they're on, especially concerning incitement to violence. And another really big problem they have is hate speech. It mm-hmm. just continues to happen. And there are also other things. I mean, when you get into some of the suicide talk that occurs in a lot of these, mm-hmm. I mean, you're not only are you violating rules in terms of use and all that stuff, you're becoming a danger if you're talking about suicide
yeah.
openly, like the way it happens in these.
It's crazy too, because that's also part of the language of these communities. They have a name for it. It's called sui fuel. And a lot of times people will post these, you know, very hopeless, like kind of memes or whatever, where it's like there's some from the video where it's like an image of a bunch of women staring at the perspective of whoever the viewer is with disgust and saying like, that feeling when you're the ugly guy and you walk into a room or whatever. It's stuff like that that just kind of like inherently makes you feel worse. And they kind of, when they get called on it, people that post this stuff, they say, oh, it's just gallows humor. And it's certainly not trying to incite anybody to do anything. But yet these boards are also filled with actual suicidal ideations and people posting, whether they be cries for help or what have you. That's a very real part of it too.
And advice on how to do it, right? Mm-hmm. So usually when one forum is banned, another one will rise up, beta style, to take its place. And now that we're talking about this idea of beta rising, let's explore the beta uprising. Also known as the incel rebellion, the more extreme parts of the incel community call for a beta uprising. This would be defined as collective action by people identifying both as beta and omega to, through acts of public violence, force a change in society. The logic and details of this plan shift, with the primary goal being to create conditions wherein the incels do not feel so oppressed and can either force or induce women to sleep with them, or in some cases, for the very, very misogynistic, angry individuals, just force women to live in some sort of servitude, right? Or even mass killings. This is dark, deplorable, very nasty stuff. But unfortunately, as longtime listeners to this show know, and as the three of us know, it is not particularly anomalous in the vast cesspit of opinions on the internet. There are people advocating all sorts of horrible, horrible, horrible things. Sometimes they're trolling, sometimes they're serious, sometimes it is a dark catharsis. But things change when the digital trash talking and dark ideation creates real world consequence.
And the incel community has done just that. And we'll learn about it right after a word from our sponsor.
Here's where it gets crazy. So, inceldom put on its big boy shoes, terrorism-wise, in recent years. Multiple young men identifying with this belief system have conducted mass murders. And we have several examples, unfortunately.
The first and most well-known, I would say, would be the case of Elliot Roger, who on May 23rd, 2014, in Isla Vista, which is part of Santa Barbara County, California, murdered 6 people, injured 14, and took his own life in his car.
The attack began when he stabbed 3 men to death in his apartment, and then he drove to a sorority house, and he tried to get in, but he was unable to. He then shot 3 women outside, 2 of them died, and he drove past a nearby deli and then shot to death a male student who was inside that deli. Then he began to speed through the area, through Isla Vista, and he shot and wounded several other pedestrians. He hit people with his car. In the end, he exchanged gunfire with police, and he did that twice, actually, as he was going to all of these places. And he received a non-fatal gunshot wound to the hip. But in the end, at the very end here, he crashed his car into a parked vehicle and police found him dead with a self-inflicted gunshot wound to his head.
And before setting out for the sorority house, shortly after he had stabbed 3 people in his apartment, he uploaded a video to YouTube titled Roger's Retribution. In the video, he details his attack plan. He states that he wants to punish women for sexually rejecting him and to punish sexually active men and couples for essentially having sex. He feels rejected. He doesn't know. He's like, I don't see what you don't see in me. I am the supreme gentleman. This moniker becomes important. It sticks around. Before he does this, he sends a written document to about 34 people in total, his friends, family, and his therapist. It is a long manifesto titled My Twisted World, The Story of Elliot Roger. In this manifesto, he claims that in his ideal world, he would quarantine all women, though that's not the term he uses, in concentration camps. And it says that the vast majority of the population in these camps would be starved to death. Deliberately, this would be an efficient and fitting way to kill them all off. I would have an enormous tower built for myself and gleefully watch them all die. He also dreamed of a, quote, pure world where man's mind can develop to greater heights than ever before. Future generations will live their lives free from having to worry about the barbarity of sex and women, which will enable them to expand their intelligence and advance the human race to a state of perfect civilization by cutting out more than half of the human population. That last part I'm adding because that's true. That's how the numbers work.
Absolutely. No, and that's a thing, too, that I meant to mention earlier. There are obviously shades of incels within this community, mm-hmm. the most extreme being abject hatred of women, mm-hmm. And the maybe lesser extreme being the more self-loathing, I'm sad that women don't find me attractive and then I'll never find happiness, but they don't necessarily automatically take it to that level of make women our sex slaves and or kill them.
Right. And this is not a defense of Roger in any case, but he did have a very long history of mental illness as well, which we see often in these shooting deaths or in these mass murders. Upon his death, when the story of the tragedy hit the news, the inceldom community began worshiping Elliot Roger to one degree or another as a martyr. And unfortunately, he inspired other people.
And just to go out here on a limb and say this, we are speaking about the incel community as one community. We do not mean that every single individual who perhaps identifies in one way or another as an incel believes that this is the right thing.
Oh, no. Yeah, exactly.
It is – if you go online and you look at message boards, you may feel that way, that every single person on this board thinks this guy did the right thing. I assure you that is not the case.
But sure. In certain subsets of this community, he is held up and revered as some sort of proto-messiah almost.
Yeah.
Or some, yeah, it's
the harbinger of the revolution.
Just had to put that there.
Well, we are anything but absolutist, and that would be an absolutist worldview to take, I believe. We also have to remember that in the age of the internet, when you're reading the printed word that is often posted anonymously, it's very difficult to divine the sincerity or motivation for a piece of writing or a piece of communication. But this martyrdom is real, and it inspired more people. The next example would be a guy named Chris Harper Mercer. On October 1st, 2015, Chris Harper Mercer, a 26-year-old student at Umpqua Community College near Roseburg, Oregon, shot 9 people and then injured 8 others. He was wounded when the police arrived, and then he took his own life. Before the shooting, he studied the actions of earlier shooters, such as Cho and such as Roger, and cited these people as his inspiration and influences. And his he also had a history of, you know, unfortunately, mental illness, which again is not it's a huge factor, but it's not an excuse and it is certainly never a justification. The timeline continues up to last year. There were several instances. Here's two of them. One in Canada, Alec Manassian, on April 23rd, 2018, drove a rented van and sped through the North York City Center Business District, targeting pedestrians with his van. He killed 10, he injured 16. This was the most deadly attack of its kind in Canadian history.
Yeah, and prior to the attack, Manassian had been active on several forums and incel fronts that called for some kind of rebellion and also saluting the aforementioned Supreme Gentleman Rogers.
Yes, so the name came back. And there's another example too, just from as recently as November, right?
Sorry, I hope I'm pronouncing this name right. Actually, I don't really care if I am. Scott Paul Bieri, Bierel, Barrel, Bierel, B-E-I-E-R-L-E. I've not heard it spoken. But on November 2nd of 2018, this 40-year-old gentleman shot and killed 2 people and wounded 5 others at a Midtown yoga studio in Tallahassee before he took his own life. And he also cited Rogers as an inspiration.
Yeah.
Yep, it's true. He also, not only did he cite Rogers as an inspiration, but he had this long history of groping women and had been in legal trouble with this before. These guys also have some 4chan posts you can find, but this is, while this is the most publicized phenomenon, real-world consequence of this community, and again, this community does not move in lockstep, this is far from the only case. There's a very high likelihood that some people identify as incels have committed unsolved sex crimes because there is glorification of assault. Given that some self-identified members of the community have gone online to brag about everything from intimidation to outright sexual assault, including planning this stuff, by the way, and advising each other how to do it, it's disturbingly likely that several members of the community have actually committed acts of sexual violence. And again, in many cases, these could just be internet trolls or people telling tales for attention. But the frequency of these sorts of posts and the anonymity, right, makes it unlikely that all of these are pranks or works of fiction. And then there's the thing that I find incredibly disturbing, which is beyond an individual act of sexual assault. And that is the concept of what they call the redistribution of sex, notably hit the mainstream in a New York Times article. But the belief is this: more extreme members of the community will call for things like the legalization of sexual assault or some sort of state-supported program to force sex, meaning Uncle Sam or some, you know, Orwellian Big Brother kind of thing would make, again, more than half of the population sleep with the other half. Again, this idea argues that men are the only real humans and therefore the human right to sex applies primarily and virtually solely to men. This idea of systematic rape it's a real thing. Which baffles me.
And this is the stuff, the very stuff that Roger, the original shooter that we talked about in his manifesto and in his video that he made before carrying out some of these crimes.
Yeah, absolutely. And at this point, the story continues. It's, again, important to note that there are tons of involuntarily celibate people of all ages, genders, creeds, and so on across this planet of ours. And these people, while quite possibly unhappy with their sex lives, are certainly not out to harm anyone. They're just looking for a human connection.
Well, and it's also – we haven't really talked about the age range of these folks because I used to call what's being described here as just being an awkward, gawky teen or something, you know? Like, at what point did it become kind of weaponized in this way, right? And I think the bubble quality that we're talking about with the social media bubble, and especially when you factor in some mental illness, mental health issues, and this kind of, as is described in the Counterpoints video, death cult model that we have here. So this notion that since you're never going to win, then you might as well go for suicide or worse. Murder-suicide. Revenge.
Mm-hmm. Right. And it's crucial to note that the difference here is that this online community is radicalizing isolated people, and this is creating real-life murderers. One of the most common questions – I'm sure a lot of us were wondering this in the course of this episode. One of the most common questions people ask when they learn about this community is, why don't incels just engage with sex workers? Right? In many places, prostitution is legalized or decriminalized. So would that be a solution? The incel community largely seems to be against this. And there are some fantastic articles by sex workers who say that this is not safe for sex workers.
I also think it's kind of missing the point because a lot of what these people crave is the companionship that comes with sex, not necessarily the sex act itself, more of the companionship and the genuine closeness and intimacy, which we kind of – now, we didn't gloss over, but it feels like that point is maybe lost, that it's all made about these little horn dogs that just can't get what they want. But surely we all can relate to the idea of being alone and not having anyone love you and give you kindness and tenderness or whatever. That could kind of make you go a little nuts. Mm-hmm. I could see that.
Yeah. If you're okay to watch something a little more mature online, watch that ContraPoints video, and the very first thing that it starts with describes exactly what we're talking about here, the desire for intimacy.
That's what I mean by human connection.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, for sure.
That's it is true. You know, it's not sex for the sake of sex could easily be a transactional interaction, especially when you're considering that someone's paying for it, right? Also, there are tons of social factors that we don't have time to get into today. We are available if you want to write to us with questions or feedback. We'd love to hear from you. We want to thank you for listening to this, and we want to hold this up as an example of how online communities can have real-world consequences.
And just to point this out, I personally can identify with that feeling of being down on yourself, not believing anything good about yourself when someone compliments you, that feeling of believing the worst about yourself, like whoever craps on me the most is probably the right person because they're telling me the truth.
Wait, people compliment you guys?
Every now and again.
I haven't had one for a long time.
Oh, pish posh.
No, yeah. See, again, like Ben can't hear it. It doesn't register in his ears, and it doesn't register in my ears very well either. I almost cannot hear that.
I think it's a very human thing, though, to always trying to be to tend to be your worst critic and your worst enemy, and because you know yourself better than anyone else, therefore you must know the deepest roots of your inadequacies. And then it's almost like this idea of seeking out those negative comments, the ones that cut to the core, and that you say, "Oh yeah, see, I was right all along because this is what I already believed. What these people that are saying it's nice, I don't believe that. Therefore." It's not true.
It's a tough world out there.
It's a tough world, and it's a hard balance to strike, right? It's about mental health and mental wellness and being good to yourself. And not to Chad-splain or anything, but I do feel like this is a mental health issue in a lot of ways.
Yeah. If you are feeling that way, there's nothing I or anyone here could say to you to probably make you feel better in this moment if you're feeling this way right now. But there are people out there who really do care about you and really do think you're a great person. Whether you want to believe that or not, it's true.
I think there's probably a lot of undiagnosed depression and anxiety and social stuff that's going on here too.
I'm going to bring us to a lighter note. Everybody hates to hear You Are Not Alone. Song coincidentally written by R. Kelly.
Oof.
A lot of people don't know. I just found that out. To end on a lighter note, if you feel like reaching out to someone and you just want someone to chat with, I would like to introduce you to something called Call a Swede. Sweden has this number, which I'll give you in a second, where you can call people and get connected to a random Swedish person. It is 46-771-793-336. So it might be a little bit of an adventure, brighten your day. I don't know if it's still open, but give it a ring. And if that number doesn't work, you can contact us directly via phone.
Yes, we are 1-833-STDWYTK. Leave a message if you're feeling some type of way. We will have your number. So We might call you back. Who knows?
You can reach us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. You can reach the best part of this show, your fellow listeners, on our Facebook community page. Here's where it gets crazy. And, I'll say it. If you want to reach out to someone, you can find me directly on Instagram. I'm at Ben Bolin.
And I'm at Embryonic Insider.
And you can reach us at our email.
Conspiracy@howstuffworks.com.